So what if the secret to, getting back like 15 hours of your week isn't working faster? Or finding that perfect time management app, but literally handing your job over to something that has, well, never worked a single day in its life.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds completely counterintuitive, right? Like, we're all so conditioned to believe that productivity just means grinding through tasks with more discipline.
Right, the whole hustle culture thing.
Exactly. But the reality of modern work is that discipline alone, it just can't save you from the sheer volume of information we're expected to process now.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Well, welcome to this custom-tailored deep dive. If you're listening, our mission today is to equip you with really practical, actionable systems to stop drowning in all those repetitive tasks. We're going to help you actually reclaim your work-life balance using AI.
And we are pulling all of this from Patrick Thomas's 2026 book, AI at Work: Increase Productivity Without Working Longer Hours.
Which is such a good read, by the way.
Oh, it's fantastic. And Thomas takes a really radically pragmatic approach here. Like, we aren't talking about artificial general intelligence taking over the world or, sci-fi scenarios.
No Terminators today.
Right, no Terminators. We're looking at deploying AI to buy your time back, literally starting this afternoon.
Okay, so let's frame this with a scenario from the book that honestly is painfully recognizable. Imagine it's Tuesday afternoon. You're a professional. The book calls her Sarah.
Okay, poor Sarah.
Yeah, poor Sarah is right. She is staring down three analytical reports due by Friday. She has a staff meeting to plan, 47 unread emails demanding thoughtful responses, and a presentation deck that needs a complete overhaul.
And then, let me guess, the boss walks in.
Yep. Her manager drops by and casually asks for a competitive analysis by the end of the week.
Oh man, I mean, that is just the baseline for the modern knowledge worker, isn't it? Under normal circumstances, Sarah is looking at a week of, skipped lunches, working late every single night, and just burning out to barely tread water.
Just bailing out a sinking boat with a teaspoon. That's what it feels like. You've got an overflowing inbox and you're just scooping with a tiny spoon.
That's a great way to put it. But in this case study, Sarah doesn't stay late. She doesn't use the teaspoon.
Right. She brings in a bucket, she opens her laptop, leverages an AI tool, and by Wednesday afternoon, so less than 24 hours later, she has solid drafts of those three reports.
Wow.
Yeah. A structured meeting agenda, a completely cleared inbox, and she actually clocks out at 5 p.m.
Which is the dream, right? And to understand how she pulled that off, we need to dive into the core framework Thomas outlines in the book. He calls it the 5D work system.
The 5 Ds. I love a good acronym. Let's break those down.
So it stands for draft, digest, decide, design, and delegate. Basically, every single task that was suffocating Sarah fit neatly into one of those five buckets.
Okay, but before we get into the actual mechanics of those 5 Ds, I think we have to establish who's doing the heavy lifting here. Because Thomas uses this brilliant mental model.
Yeah, the intern model. He says you need to view AI as the most capable intern you have ever hired.
An intern who, just happens to be superhumanly fast, never sleeps, and has basically read every article and book in human history.
Precisely. Like, you ask this intern for a draft analyzing global supply chains, and it spits it out in 4 seconds.
Right, but and this is a big but, there is a massive vulnerability here, isn't there?
Oh, totally. Because this intern has never held a real job. It doesn't know your company culture. It doesn't know your specific clients.
It definitely can't read the room.
Exactly. It is completely blind to office politics. So if you just turn to this intern and say, hey, write an email to the marketing team about the new budget, the output is a total gamble.
Right, like it might give you a super stiff legal memo, or it might sound like some peppy startup pitch with emojis.
Yeah, exactly. So the fundamental mindset shift Thomas demands is this. AI is your execution tool, but you are still the expert.
You're the one steering the ship.
Right. Your job shifts from doing all the grunt work to directing the work. And to do that effectively, you need a specific communication protocol.
Which brings us to what he calls the prompting formula. Because, I mean, the difference between AI output that you have to completely rewrite and output that you can just use immediately, it comes down to how you ask for it.
Yes, how you constrain the request. The prompting formula has 6 parts. Ready?
Hit me.
Role, task, context, requirements, format, and example.
Okay, so instead of just saying, help me with my email, it's way more detailed.
Way more. So you'd say something like, You are an experienced HR manager. That's the role.
Okay.
Write a follow-up email to a vendor. That's the task. They haven't responded to our last three inquiries over the past month. There's your context.
Got it. So we're really boxing it in.
Exactly. Then you add requirements. The tone must be polite but firm, indicating this is their final chance before we go to a competitor.
Ooh, tough but fair.
Right. And finally, the format. Output this as three short paragraphs with a bulleted list of missing documents.
Okay, see, I hear that, and my immediate reaction, and I'm sure someone listening is thinking this too, is, wait, if I have to meticulously type out the role, the task, the context, the formatting, the requirements, isn't it faster to just write the email myself?
That is, without a doubt, the most common hesitation. It feels like you're spending more time managing the intern than doing the work.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of friction.
But that hesitation assumes you have to write that giant prompt every single time, and you don't. That's actually the fifth D in our system, delegate.
Oh, okay. So how does that work?
You do the heavy lifting of writing that master prompt once. You iterate with the AI, you know, tell it, make it a bit softer or shorter until it's perfect, and then you save it in a personal prompt library.
Oh, wow. So you're basically building a custom app for yourself, a custom button for a task you hate doing.
Exactly. The next time that vendor ignores you, you just open your prompt library, paste the master prompt, swap the name, and hit generate. You are permanently delegating that cognitive load.
Okay, that makes so much sense. You build a machine once, and it just runs for you. So let's aim this newly trained intern at the first D in the system. Draft.
Let's do it.
And let's apply it to pretty much the biggest black hole in any professional schedule. Emails.
Oh, yeah. The statistics in the book are just sobering. Thomas points out that the average knowledge worker spends 2.5 hours a day on email.
2.5 hours every day.
Yeah. That's roughly 600 hours a year. Or if you do the math, 15 full work weeks dedicated entirely to your inbox.
That's physically painful to hear.
It's a massive misallocation of human potential. But Thomas gives this great example of Marcus, an operations manager.
Right, the guy who dreaded his mornings.
Exactly. Marcus used to spend the first 45 minutes of his day just paralyzed by his inbox, trying to figure out how to, you know, politely tell difficult stakeholders that things were delayed.
Which is exhausting, staring at that blinking cursor.
It is. But now Marcus uses AI for the draft phase. He just pastes the difficult email into his tool and then types a completely messy, unformatted thought like, tell them we can't meet the deadline, shipping is delayed, offer next Tuesday instead.
Just a total brain dump.
Yep. And the AI turns that into a perfectly polished diplomatic draft. So Marcus's 45-minute dread session is now just a 15-minute editing routine.
That psychological shift is fascinating to me, because editing a document feels so fundamentally different than writing one from scratch.
It really does, because it uses a totally different part of your brain. Generating text requires huge amounts of executive function. You're deciding what to say, how to say it, picking the words, it's draining.
Yeah, you're building a house from the foundation up.
Right, but editing is just evaluative. You're just looking at a draft and saying, that sentence is a bit harsh, let's soften it. It takes a fraction of the energy.
So you're trading high-friction generation for low-friction curation. I love that. Okay, so that's drafting. Let's move to the second D, which is digest.
This is a lifesaver for meetings.
Oh, meetings. The other black hole on the calendar.
Yeah.
The case study here is Jennifer, right? She's a manager.
Yeah, Jennifer runs 3 team meetings a week. And historically, she would spend 45 minutes after every single one typing up notes, trying to read her own messy handwriting, trying to remember who promised to do what.
Which always leads to things falling through the cracks.
Always. But Jennifer totally transformed this. Now, she uses AI to digest all that chaos. During the meeting, she doesn't even try to write full sentences. She just types fragmented, messy bullet points as people talk.
Just capturing the raw ingredients.
Exactly. And the absolute second the meeting ends, she drops those notes into her AI tool, uses her master prompt, and gets back a clean summary, complete with a table of action items, assigned owners, and deadlines.
In like, what, under 30 minutes?
Usually under 2 minutes.
That's wild. It reminds me of, think of a brainstorming meeting, like a chaotic restaurant kitchen during the dinner rush.
Right.
Okay, I like this. There are ingredients flying everywhere, people shouting orders, multiple pots boiling over. Having AI digest the notes is like having this magical sous chef who steps in the second the rush is over. They instantly clean the stations, label the leftovers, and organize the fridge.
Yes. It brings immediate order to human chaos.
But wait, I have to ask. If AI can perfectly summarize the meeting and spit out all the action items in real time, does everyone even need to be in the meeting in the first place?
It's a great question, and it really forces us to look at why we meet. If the only point of the meeting is just reading status updates out loud.
Then it could have been an email or an AI digest.
Exactly. But humans gathering together serves a bigger purpose, which brings us to the third D, decide. AI is amazing at summarizing your options, but it cannot make the call.
Ah, so the AI can build a pros and cons list of two marketing strategies, but it can't actually pick one.
Right, because AI has no accountability. It doesn't have skin in the game. A human has to look at the data, assume the risk of the decision, and navigate the emotional nuances of getting the team on board.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've covered draft, digest, and decide. Reclaiming all those hours is obviously huge for office workers like Jennifer and Marcus, but if we think this is only for, you know, middle managers staring at Google calendars, we're missing the bigger picture.
Oh, absolutely. Thomas spends a lot of time showing how this impacts field work and specialized industries, and that's where the fourth D comes in, design.
Right, structuring raw info. Let's talk about Carlos, the electrician from the book.
Carlos is such a great example. He's a master electrician, runs his own small business, but he hated the paperwork. He'd be exhausted at 7 p.m., sitting at his computer, manually formatting project proposals.
And he was actually losing bids because he was too slow, right?
Yeah.
The big corporate guys were just beating him to the punch. So Carlos changed his workflow. Now he doesn't even touch a keyboard. He walks out of a client's house, gets in his truck, and just uses voice to text on his phone.
He just talks to the AI.
Just talks naturally. He'll say, hey, upgrading a panel to 200 amps, need a new dedicated circuit for the island, gonna have to patch the drywall.
It's a stream of consciousness.
Yep. And by the time he turns the key in the ignition, the AI has designed a fully formatted professional scope of work document, complete with liability clauses.
That is incredible.
He won 3 new clients his first month just by being the fastest to deliver a polished proposal.
It totally levels the playing field for small businesses. And it's not just contractors, right? The book mentions educators and healthcare workers, too.
Right. Fields that are just drowning in unpaid admin work. Teachers are dropping raw curriculum standards into AI and asking it to design a 50-minute lesson plan complete with warm-ups.
That alone saves hours on a Sunday night.
And in healthcare, clinicians are dictating messy shorthand observations, and the AI designs them into perfectly structured SOAP notes. You know, subjective, objective, assessment, plan.
We even see it in Jeep Research. There's Priya, the marketing analyst.
Oh, yeah, Priya. She used to spend 4 solid hours reading competitor blogs every week. Now she uses tools like Claude to design quick 5-bullet summaries. 4 hours of reading became 45 minutes of digesting.
And you don't even have to download a bunch of weird new apps to do this anymore. This stuff is already where you work. Microsoft Copilot is right there in Office 365. Gemini is in Google Workspace.
Right. The tools are aggressively moving into our existing spaces. But, and this is a massive but, that aggressive integration introduces arguably the most critical chapter in Thomas's book.
The safety guardrails. Because, wait. If I can just pause for a second, if a nurse is pasting clinical notes or a teacher is dropping student data into an AI, isn't that a massive privacy risk?
It is a colossal risk. In fact, they are likely committing severe regulatory violations. This is rule number 2 of Thomas's safety framework. Never share confidential information in a public AI model.
Because public models learn from what you put in them.
Yep. Exactly. If you drop patient health info into a free AI tool, you are violating IPIVA. If you put in student records, you're violating FERPA. No trade secrets, no client contracts.
Because the second you hit enter, that data goes to a third-party server. You've lost containment. It might get spit out to someone else entirely.
Exactly. If you're in a regulated industry, you can't just open a browser tab and paste things. You have to use enterprise-grade, secured AI environments that your IT department has vetted, where the data stays locked down.
Okay, so that's the privacy guardrail. Keep it secret, keep it safe.
Yeah.
What's the other major safety rule?
Rule 3, watch out for hallucinations. That's the technical term for when an AI just completely invents information.
And it does it with such terrifying confidence.
Oh, it sounds incredibly authoritative. You have to remember, these models are basically programmed to be people pleasers. Their main goal is to complete your prompt. So if they don't have the facts, they will stitch together statistically probable but totally fake info just to bridge the gap.
It's like driving a race car. It can get you to the finish line in record time.
Yeah.
But if you don't know where the brakes are, like understanding hallucinations, you're going to crash spectacularly. I like to think of AI as a highly trained improv actor.
Huh, how so?
Well, the golden rule of improv comedy is yes and.
Yeah.
Right. You never break characters. You never stop the scene to say, I don't know. The AI does the exact same thing. If you ask it for legal precedents that don't exist, it won't say, I'm drawing a blank. It will just invent a fake court case to keep the scene going.
That is a perfect analogy. And it's exactly why human verification is non-negotiable. It also means you have to match the right tool to the right task safely. Thomas says treating all AI tools the same is a recipe for disaster.
Right. So, like, ChatGPT is your Swiss Army knife, great for drafting emails or brainstorming, but for heavy lifting, you want something else.
Yeah, if you are analyzing a 100-page legal contract, you want to use a tool like Claude.
Why Claude specifically? What's mechanically different about it?
It's about something called the context window. Think of it as the model's short-term memory. Claude has a massive context window. It can hold hundreds of pages in its active memory at once without forgetting what was on page one.
Ah, so it won't hallucinate as much on large documents.
Exactly. And if you're doing live research and want to totally avoid that improv actor problem, the book recommends Perplexity.
Because it's connected to the internet.
Right. It runs real-time searches and gives you direct footnote citations to actual websites. It grounds the output in reality. Understanding those differences is how you deploy the right intern for the job.
But there are some jobs the intern should just never do, right?
Definitely. Thomas says never use AI for tasks requiring genuine human empathy.
Like writing a condolence email.
Yeah, please don't do that. Or navigating a delicate interpersonal conflict. And you must never rely on it for critical decisions where there is zero margin for error and you don't have the expertise to double-check its work.
Which perfectly brings us to the future horizon of all this.
Yeah.
Everything we've talked about so far is treating AI as a passive tool. We prompt it, it drafts, we review. But Thomas says we are moving toward AI agents.
This is the next massive wave. An AI agent isn't just a passive chat box. It's given an objective, and it operates autonomously.
So it's doing the work without me constantly holding its hand.
Yes. Very soon, an agent won't just draft an email for you. It will securely read a client's request in your inbox, cross-reference your calendar, graph the response, and just hit send. It will act as a true autopilot.
But wait, if AI becomes the autopilot doing all the execution, what is the human actually doing? I mean, a ship still desperately needs a captain to decide which city we're sailing to, right? And to calm the passengers if there's turbulence.
Exactly. And this creates a fascinating paradox. As AI gets exponentially better at the technical execution, human skills actually become the most valuable currency in the marketplace.
You're talking about the softer skills. Because, yeah, I can automate data scraping, but I can't automate taking a hesitant client out to lunch and reading their body language.
Bingo. Thomas breaks these human advantages into three domains. The first is judgment. AI can give you 50 different marketing strategies in 10 seconds, but it requires human intuition and experience to look at those 50 options and know which one will actually resonate with the culture right now.
The AI builds the map, but the human has to read the terrain.
Perfectly said. The second domain is relationships. Business runs on trust, and trust is a fundamentally biological human thing. An algorithm cannot show grace during a tense negotiation.
You can't look someone in the eye and shake their hand.
Exactly. And the third domain is creative vision. AI looks backward at existing data to predict what comes next, but looking forward, deciding to solve a completely new problem or imagining something that breaks current logic, that leap of imagination is uniquely human.
So to stay ahead, Thomas says we don't all need to become programmers, right? It's much simpler.
Very simple. Build a learning habit. Spend just 15 minutes a week trying a new feature or tweaking one prompt. The people who win won't be the ones who fear AI or the ones who trust it blindly. It's the people who fuse human judgment with AI capability.
Don't let the tool dictate your workflow. Keep your agency. So let's recap our journey today on this deep dive. We found our bucket for the sinking boat. We learned to treat AI as a fast but context-blind intern. We mastered the prompting formula role, task, context, requirements, format, example to get better results.
And we applied the 5 Ds: draft, digest, decide, design, and delegate.
Right. To crush email dread, summarize chaotic meetings, and build proposals, all while keeping IPO and hallucinations in check. It's an amazing blueprint.
It is, but, and this is the final thought I want to leave you with because Thomas brings this up and it's so provocative.
Okay, let's hear it.
We are treating AI as an intern.
Yeah.
We're offloading all the basic drafting, summarizing, and entry-level work so we can focus on high-level strategy.
Yeah, which sounds great for us right now.
It is great for us today.
Yeah.
But think about the next generation. If AI does all the foundational intern work, how do human interns actually learn the ropes?
Oh, wow.
Right? If we automate the entire junior phase of a career, how do they get the thousands of hours of practice they need to eventually become the experts with that valuable human judgment?
That's actually terrifying. We're automating the exact training ground needed to build the captains of tomorrow. You can't run the ship if you haven't sweat in the engine room.
Exactly. We are solving for speed today, but we have to figure out how to manufacture experience for tomorrow. It's a massive dilemma.
Man, that is an incredible tension to keep in mind as you start deploying these systems. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into AI at work. You have the FIDE framework, so go start small, build your first master prompt, and go make some time back.